I'm very excited, very pleased to have in the studio some of my favorite people in the environmental realm. From left to right, Jack Darren, who is director of the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Next to him, Jennifer Waller with the Illinois Environmental Council, Max Muller from Environment Illinois, and Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force. You guys all comfortable? You're all tweeting there. You're taking photos on your various devices. That's what I like about it. You know, people coming in the studio and they're all snapping pictures and stuff, especially when there's a big group like this. We've got a lot to get done in an hour because if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show, and Jen Walling and Jack and Max and Tom, thank you all for the information you sent ahead of time. And I always try to get stuff posted so people can kind of keep score, follow along, and especially if it involves taking action, you know, go to the links and see what's at stake. We just got done with a session in Springfield, and I was surprised, looking at all the legislation that was considered there, how much of it was environmental legislation. So we actually got some pretty good things accomplished. Jack, how would you score what happened in Springfield before the end of May?
First of all, thanks for having us on.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
Fancy new digs here. It's great to be on the show again. The name of the movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, comes to mind for me. I don't know how others feel, but...
Okay, now I got to ask you this. Have you seen my website?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you're picking up on that theme. Yeah, and that's what I did. I called it The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly concerning environmental laws.
I think you summarized it pretty well. You know, I think there were some unfinished business, some very important things that remain on Springfield's agenda that we've got to get done. We want to talk, you know, about funding for our state park system, about the risks that fracking for natural gas poses to Illinois. There were some bad bills passed that we'll talk about this morning that I think Governor Quinn needs to address. But there were some good things that happened. And I think if you look at the big picture where the country's going, we can be proud, I think, here in Illinois that the progress is still possible. We still have, although it's a difficult time for our state, we've got a political environment where people are still willing to talk about clean water and clean air and clean energy, and we did make some advances this spring.
You know, that's a really good point. Given that the state is in a financial mess and is still trying to claw its way out of that, we could very easily be going down a road where the legislators say, we don't have the wherewithal to deal with those environmental issues. You know, we've got to get back to basics. And I talk about it on the show all the time that it's the environmental laws are sometimes a redheaded stepchild. It's like, we'll get to that, you know, as if the quality of your life is not important and the quality of the planet and the quality of the state is not important. I never get that. I do not understand that way of thinking, but people do that. And you know, yeah, we could be in Wisconsin. We could be in Michigan. Here we are in Illinois with people considering these issues. And one of the issues that got passed, a law that got passed, was the Cook County landfill moratorium. Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force is here. You guys are pretty happy about that, but we're still waiting for the governor, aren't we?
The bill is on the governor's desk presently. And we're anticipating that he's going to sign the bill. That was legislation that was adopted down in Springfield by both the House and the Senate, apart from the Cook County Board taking up similar legislation that would abolish landfilling in Cook County. So that the Cook County bill has passed in the County Board, but the other bills on the governor's desk waiting for a signature.
All right. That's something that I've been trying to figure out. Do you need a Kremlinologist to understand where the governor is? I mean, do you have to read tea leaves? Is this like the Supreme Court waiting to hear about Obamacare? Because don't we have an idea that Governor Quinn is supposed to be an environmentalist? So why are we sitting here saying, gosh, we hope he signs it? Don't we have any indication of this?
You know, the legislature takes a little while after the legislative session to even forward bills to the governor's desk. And so some of the bills that passed the legislature that were good for the environment, his office has only just gotten in the past few days.
Still, it's not like he doesn't see these things coming down the road. That's kind of what I don't get about this. I know that some of these bills are complex and that there's more than just our side of the issue or a side. There are many sides sometimes.
Right.
But I'm always kind of surprised that we don't have any idea of what the governor is going to do on a certain bill. Or am I characterizing this incorrectly?
Well, I think we often do, and some of the bills we'll talk about, I think we're pretty confident. I think that, you know, we're talking about the landfill ban in Cook County, the governor's Department of Natural Resources was really crucial in that fight in testifying to the amazing natural habitat value on the southeast side of Chicago and how new landfills, whether they're expanded or new, are not consistent with what the governor wants to do, for instance, with the Millennium Reserve program that you've talked about and that Tom's worked hard on. Mm-hmm. So I think that we feel pretty good about that. But Max is right. You know, there are a lot of bills that have reached the governor's desk. They need to do their due diligence. I think everyone's aware the governor has focused unprecedentedly so on pension reform and
right.
getting our state out of the fiscal hole. So I think we have to respect that and hope that take confidence in the governor's strong environmental track record and that he'll do the right thing on these bills.
Jen, how does this work? When the governor gets these bills, he's got a period of time where he looks at them and then and he has to sign them or veto them by a certain date. Where are we at right now?
So, you know, the legislative session ended on May 31st, and after a bill passes, the chamber that it last passed out of has 30 days to send it over to the governor. Some of them get sent right away. You know, I know we'll talk about the Leucadia coal plant, and that one almost automatically after passing was sent to the governor. But mm-hmm. then after it's sent to the governor's desk, and you can see if you're at home and you want to look at these things, ilga.gov is the Illinois General Assembly's website. And you can tell if you type the bill in, if it says sent to the governor, that means from that point on, he's got 60 days to sign it. And he has a bunch of options after that 60-day clock starts. He could just not do anything at all for 60 days, and then at the end, it just becomes law. He could proactively sign the thing. He could veto it, or he could amendatory veto it. So, you know, he's got a lot of options for these different things. And we have a lot of bills that we're tracking, and we've discussed with the governor's office, and we're waiting. I know they're doing a lot of review in that office, and waiting to see what happens.
So right now we feel as though the governor will sign the Cook County landfill moratorium bill.
Yes.
That seems like a no-brainer, right? And that's under the category of good. That's one of the good things that came
certainly
out of the
good.
Session. Another good thing was the CAFO permit bill. Max, what was that all about?
So under the Clean Water Act, this is the United States Clean Water Act passed in the 70s. It's illegal to pollute into a waterway without getting a permit to do so. And in Illinois, the clean water permitting process is managed by our state Environmental Protection Agency. They have to hire engineers and permit authors and regulators to enforce clean water law in Illinois. And the cost of doing that isn't actually borne by taxpayers. It's paid for by the polluters themselves. The industries that discharge pollution into waterways pay fees for their pollution permits. And those fees cover the cost of enforcing the Clean Water Act in Illinois. And there was one industry that was exempted from these fees and paying their fair share when the law was passed in 2006, and that's the CAFO industry, the large concentrated animal feeding operations. These things are big polluters. They're big contributors to water pollution in Illinois. A cow makes as much waste as 17 people. If you've got 1,000 cows, it's like a small city's worth of waste. And they don't have sewage treatment plants for these things. If the waste pits overflow into waterways, which happens, thousands of fish can be killed, every living thing in 10 miles of waterway. And so these things do need to be regulated, and they weren't paying at all for the process of regulation. And so now what's going to happen is their unique exemption from the law that requires them to pay for their permits has been ended, and they'll be paying fees going forward.
Was that a surprise that this got passed?
You know, the first year we
because
worked on
obviously it. Obviously, they're powerful in Illinois. CAFOs are a powerful industry.
We have a lot of CAFOs in Illinois, and they're represented by the Farm Bureau, which is a powerful lobby force in the State House. And the first year we introduced this bill, the Farm Bureau was unwilling to even talk about it with us. But over time, we worked on it. We built support for it. Legislators heard from lots of people who supported fairness in how the Clean Water Program is funded. And I think that the Farm Bureau had to start taking it seriously. And eventually they came to the negotiating table and we arrived at a bill that establishes fees that are going to keep Illinois EPA's Clean Water Program solvent. And the Farm Bureau supported them. I think we built enough support that it was in their interest to come to the table and help us design the bill so it was good for everybody.
And do we expect the governor to sign this one?
I hope so. I think so. All signs are good.
Yeah.
And he has.
All right, back to the tea leaves then.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we have no reason to doubt it.
Okay. That, by the way, that's Max Muller from Environment Illinois, also in the studio. Jack Darren from Sierra Club Illinois Chapter, Jennifer Waller, Illinois Environmental Council, and Tom Shepard from Southeast Environmental Task Force. So that's another good one. So the HB 5642, the CAFO permit bill. Then there's we're dealing with fertilizer runoff. Folks who listen to this show know that I've talked about this before. That we know what happens to the fertilizer. It ends up in the Gulf of Mexico in a huge dead zone the size of New Jersey or Connecticut, depending on which state you like least. I don't know. Why do people always use the size of New Jersey as a measuring stick? There's something about New Jersey.
And why is New Jersey now trying to use Illinois? As they're trying to sort of deflect that negative attention back to us.
Maybe they are. But the point is, tell me about this bill, Jack.
As you've talked about on your show, probably our most widespread water pollution problem in Illinois is too much nutrients in our waters. And gardeners obviously know how important nutrients are for life, particularly for plant life. But when there's too much of them in the water, they cause problems. They cause problems far away in the Gulf of Mexico, like you talked about, but they also cause problems here at home. You fertilize, just like you'd fertilize your garden, if you're over-fertilizing the algae in the water, that algae population explodes and they suck the oxygen out of the water that fish need to breathe. So whether it's on the Chicago River system, waters in our suburbs or our large rivers like the Illinois and the Mississippi, this is a real problem. And we've been making real progress on the major sources of it. It comes out of sewage treatment plants. We've got great investments that are creating jobs and clean water infrastructure, taking nutrients out of our wastewater. We're taking nutrients out of the fertilizer we're putting on our lawns. But agriculture, which has been the biggest contributor, has been a very difficult nut to crack. Max talked about the political power of agribusiness in Illinois, and we've really struggled. The Clean Water Act is a great law, but its ability to hold individual farms accountable is imperfect. And so what we did, instead of just talking about the problem and fighting about it, we teamed up with actually the fertilizer industry, and they see the need also to take action, which is real progress. And they've agreed basically to tax themselves, small tax on commercial agricultural fertilizer sold in Illinois. And that's going to go into a fund that's going to help farmers start to use less fertilizer, put it on at the right time. You know, don't put on tons of nitrogen on your corn crop right before a huge rain.
But aren't they supposed to know that anyway? I mean, when I talk about this, I usually yell at the consumer and say, you're not reading and following labeled directions. But farmers do because that's their livelihood. So were they less responsible than they could be?
I think I wouldn't say less responsible, maybe less informed. For instance, mm-hmm. farmers are a very hard job to do, and they're always trying to get ahead. So culturally, there are a lot of farmers that would put their nitrogen on before the winter came because your harvest was over. Your plants, your crop don't need nitrogen until the spring. But if you could check that off the list and say, wow, I'm ahead of the game because I put my nitrogen on in the fall. Well, if you get a big rain in February and March, like often happens before your plants have even been planted, that nitrogen's gone. It's mm-hmm. contributing to the dead zone. You put money on your field that washed away. So I think that economic value of that fertilizer matters to farmers. And I think farmers also care about water quality, but they need to be shown by their peers what works. And that's what this bill is going to start to do.
And that's encouraging, though, that you were working with the fertilizer industry on this. And in some of the other bills, you've worked with other industry people as well.
Yeah, I think that's – our movement has really evolved a great deal over the last couple of decades where – we really are recognizing that if we're going to make progress on solutions from clean water to climate change, we've got to engage with the economic forces that are driving either the problems or the solutions. And I think all of our organizations are doing a really good job of that.
In fact, those organizations are the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, Environment Illinois, Illinois Environmental Council, and Southeast Environmental Task Force. And, okay, so going down the list of the good, you know, and it's amazing so much of this came through. A couple of other things here. We had the banning mercury in hearing aid batteries. Now, that kind of sounds like a no-brainer. Why is that important?
And this one was a no-brainer. We didn't even we weren't even really the driving force behind this bill. This bill came from American hearing aid battery companies that no longer manufacture their batteries with mercury in them, the zinc air batteries that are used in hearing aids. And a lot of overseas manufacturers still use mercury. And so, you know, I like to think that this is sort of we have worked on leading to a mercury-free Illinois for so long and fought so hard that this one was just easy for the legislature to do. It was easy for them to pass. They already know what a problem mercury pollution is. And this one, you know, I think it was introduced at the end of the session in April or May and had a very high vote count if it wasn't unanimous. So it was very, very highly supported by the legislature.
And I know I don't want to get sucked into this, but it, when you talk about batteries at all, the thing that gets my goat right now is the fact that we're being told by the IEPA to throw away our batteries, put them into landfills, that since they're not that toxic, you know, and that's the qualifying phrase, not that toxic anymore. We've taken the lead out of batteries and the mercury out of batteries. So there's just not enough to make it worth recycling. I mean, the city. I first found out about it at the beginning of the year when the city of Chicago posted on its website, said, we no longer accept batteries at libraries. And somebody wrote to me and said, well, why is that? What's going on here? And so I did some checking and talked to some EPA people, and they said, yeah, really? We tell people that there's really not much good in recycling them. Well, that's insane because, you know, what I'd like to know is how many billions of batteries are manufactured each year. But then I went and looked at other states, and it's kind of the same thing across the nation. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me we're missing an opportunity here.
Yeah. You know, we're missing a lot of opportunities with recycling and solid waste just in Illinois. And one of the bills that passed this year is something that I think will help us work to address that. It was HB, I think it's 4986. It was a recycling commission. So the state is going to put together a commission that has to report by next year on new laws. And, you know, we're really, you know, we have some groups that are looking to get appointed, and we're really looking in depth towards three things. One is, you know, redefining what solid waste is in Illinois, because that's one of the things you're talking about. You know, is that hazardous waste batteries anymore, or can we make them so they're in a category where they're more recyclable? And I think we need to redo our whole solid waste laws to really focus more on diversion and set better goals and have those goals really be able to be quantified and fact-checked, basically. So I'm looking forward to that work that we're going to do on
Max, you look like you want to jump in on this.
I just wanted to second. I think you could imagine that we could make it so that Illinois is a state that is a zero-waste state and really is addressing every possible opportunity to divert waste from the landfill and recycle and recover materials. A big part of that is going to be making producers responsible for the end of life of the products they manufacture. We do that for electronic waste in Illinois. We do that for some products. It's a good environmental principle to make producers responsible for the environmental impacts of their products at end of life, because then they have the incentive. If there are dangerous chemicals in the product, they have the incentive not to use them because they'll have to pay to deal with them. And that's a principle we want to keep advancing in the state. I want to just go back to the mercury and hearing aids bill real quick. Mm-hmm. Illinois Environmental Council, Jen Walling sitting right next to me, her organization has led this mercury-free Illinois effort for the last 10 years and won a victory just about every single year eliminating mercury from a line of products in Illinois. And so we're to the point now where there are virtually zero products where mercury is used. We've gotten it out of mercury in cosmetics. We've got mercury out of cosmetics. We've got mercury out of the switches used in automobiles. The list goes on, and this is very good work And it's something that Illinois can really be proud of. We're really leading the way in terms of getting mercury out of products. And because of all the work in previous years that has happened, legislators know mercury is dangerous, and it's pretty easy to get them to understand why to pass a bill to get mercury out of products.
I want to go through very quickly a couple more good before I break here. The shark fin ban, that's now, you know, I'm one of those people. Okay, you're smiling about it because I look at it and I go, I didn't know that was in play. What was that all about?
Sure. You know, this is an issue that has been worked on nationally, and it's not often, actually, this was kind of fun to work on because it's not often that we work on a global issue in the state legislature. But, you know, many state shark, the whole shark fin practice, you know, when they're collecting shark fins for shark fin soup, they cut off the fin of the shark and throw the shark back in, or otherwise don't use the rest of the shark. And this practice for this very expensive product, it has been very dangerous for sharks. And, you know,
yeah, to the tune of tens of millions of sharks killed each year.
Yeah.
You know, I have that whole problem with the whole predator and top of the food chain thing. We want to be the only predator out there. And so we feel it's okay to eliminate sharks and cougars and, you know, even coyotes we don't have any use for. And they're all part of nature. They're all part of the plan, whatever that plan is. Mm-hmm. And we have no right to decimate their populations. Yeah.
And we're not, you know, other states have done this, and you'd think Illinois, you know, we're not by any oceans. Why are we doing this? But, you know, I found out from this, we're in the top five states for imports of this product. So, you know, maybe not a huge thing overall towards some of the priorities that we're working on, but still an important show globally that we're not going to sell this product in Illinois.
I'm going to skip to something that is under the good, but it's a negative in that it didn't happen, and that's the defeat of Tenasca. This was good, and I see you sliding the microphone over to Jack from Sierra Club, but this also ties into something on the southeast side, which is Leucadia. So how does this all come together? What happened there, Jack?
You know, I think that as your listeners may know, there's been this really disturbing trend in Springfield lately for Springfield to really seriously consider raising our electric bills and our heating bills to pay for these coal plants that we really don't need, and that are real threats to communities like Tom. So we had a couple more rounds of battle on this basic topic of should Illinois be forcing ratepayers to enter into long-term contracts for these coal plants by out-of-state corporations. And we sort of went one and one. On Tenasca, the one that would raise your electric rates, that stalled out. I think legislators heard a lot that we didn't need the electricity in Illinois. We certainly didn't need the pollution. They were going to put 10 billion pounds of new pollution into the year in Illinois with no clear plan to address it. And so that kind of stalled out. Now, they've said that they may want to come back.
So they're like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. They'll come charging out of the bathtub again.
How many Friday the 13th movies were there? Exactly. This is a little bit of a horror movie. But then, unfortunately, we did have one that made it to the governor's desk, and this is a familiar one as well that Tom knows all about, and that's the Leucadia gas plant proposal on the south side.
And you know what? We're going to get to the Leucadia under the ugly, because that's under the ugly thing. But the good is that Tenasca got beaten back. But the Tenasca was not a gasification plant, was it?
Tenasca
was.
Both are plants to turn coal into gas.
Okay, right.
Tenasca would then burn that gas to make electricity. At Leucadia, they would just sell us the gas as gas to heat our homes.
But in either case, that leads into the whole market forces with gas now, and gas is cheap, and they're betting that the price is going to go up, so that this is actually a good deal for Illinoisans. But in fact, right now they'd be paying a lot more for gas from those plants.
A tremendous amount more, and it looks like a worse deal as time goes by. You know, we're going to talk about fracking and the things that are causing low gas prices. So energy issues are always complicated, but as an economic matter, natural gas is really cheap right now, and experts expect it to stay that way for a long time. So turning coal into gas is not needed economically, and it raises a whole host of environmental problems.
All right. That's the good. We just went through a whole list of good. There's more on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can see the good. Now we move to the bad, and after that we move to the ugly. And in the studio with me, I have Tom Shepard, Jennifer Waller, Max Muller, Jack Darren. We'll be back to them in just a second. Guess what? I've been getting Jennifer's name wrong. It's just unbelievable. It's because when I was putting this together, I was working fast last night, and I typed Waller, and I know you're Walling. I know your name.
Do you think your name's easy, Mike?
Well, mine is Gnomevac now. That's what we've changed it to. Sorry. I apologize for that. No, you got to know better than that.
2, 3, 4. Ooh.
And in studio this morning, we have Jennifer Walling, oh dear, from the Illinois Environmental Council, Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force, Jack Darren from Illinois Chapter of the Sierra Club, and Max Muller from Environment Illinois. Boy, if I had typed anything else wrong, I'd be getting everybody's names askew. And Tom wanted to call attention to something that to tag on to the good that's happened this year. Tom, go ahead. We've lost a couple of coal plants, or are about to lose a couple of coal plants in
the
area.
Right. Through an extraordinary effort of the Clean Power Coalition in Chicago, this year it was announced that Fisk and Crawford coal-fired power plants will be closing. I think Fisk is about due to close pretty soon once their stockpile of coal runs out, I believe. And Crawford maybe next year, is that right?
They'll both be closed by September.
Okay.
Really? Both?
Both.
That's unbelievable. I mean, 2 years ago, I didn't see that happening. A year ago, I didn't see it happening.
I think about a year ago now, we started to hope that we were seeing it happening.
Yeah.
But it was, Tom's right. This was one of the most powerful and broad and deep coalitions that I've ever worked with. And mm-hmm. It really, that's what it took. It also took leadership from the mayor. But I think without the community joining forces with a whole host of different interests, I don't think it would have happened. And again, we were talking about the juxtaposition of what's going on in Illinois versus the country. So if you look around the country where you've got the politics aligning behind coal and against even the science of climate change, to show here in Illinois that we can move Chicago beyond coal to clean energy is a really important for our health, but it's an important act of leadership for the country to follow, too.
And, Max, as you were pointing out, this is kind of a landmark year for those kinds of things.
Exactly, in Illinois. So we've got Fisk and Crawford power plant shutting down. As Tom mentioned during the break, the State Line power plant announced it, right on the board with Indiana, announced its closing. Tenaska has fired its lobbyists and pulled out of Illinois for good.
They fired the lobbyists?
Yes, they did. They did. There was a day in Springfield where it went around. It was the buzz that Tenaska had fired their lobbyists. And then the thing I think left to do is Leucadia and the questions about whether that plant will get built on the south side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to join in the conversation, and Chuck is on the line. We'll get to him in just a little bit because we're getting to that subject. 773-763-9278. Let me find my list here. Okay, there's the good, the bad. All right, one of the bad things that happened in Springfield is that funding for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources did not come through. That's a big story because the IDNR has been bleeding money for the last few years. What's not getting done because they don't have the cash?
Sure. You know, there's just so much that is not getting done.
Let me throw something at you. Is it tied to the Starved Rock State Park thing? Because IDNR, you know, handles – I look at that and I say, here's IDNR. They're attempting to regulate the mine that's going to go and the mines that go in the state. But at the same time, they're trying to regulate the state park. And is this a lack of staff that they can't seem to juggle both at the same time? Is it a lack of funding?
I think it is connected indirectly. I think that, you know, the Starved Rock situation has highlighted so many important problems, whether it's fracking and the demand for this sand, but I think it does speak to the department's weakened position to stand up and be not only the people that run our state parks, but the people that fight for our state parks and all the natural areas that are worthy of passing on to future generations. When the department is understaffed, when the department is basically at the mercy of the legislature for their very existence, they're less willing to stand up and take tough stands, even if it's to save probably the most visible and precious state park we have in Illinois.
Well, yeah, and I think you're right. It might be an indirect connection, but I see the connection. And the point is there has to be sustainable funding for IDNR.
Right. And we really can't have things like this happen when the department not only is weakened, they've lost more than half their staff, more than half their funding over the last decade, and they have more to do than they did 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this happen when they are in that weakened position and they have to go to Springfield hat in hand every year and saying, please save me. So I think the bill that nearly passed and hopefully is going to be on the good list by the end of the year would take them out of that cycle of weakness and giving them sustainable permanent funding that the governor has pledged would not be swept to other areas of state government so that we can begin to rebuild a very strong Department of Natural Resources. We still have great scientists, expertise, professionalism there, but they need to be strengthened.
And you mentioned something else. You touched on fracking, which was another part of the bad. We wanted to get some fracking oversight in Illinois, and that did not happen. Max, address that issue.
So in states where fracking has taken hold, this is drilling for natural gas by drilling down about a mile or more and then turning the wellbore sideways and drilling laterally a mile and then injecting millions of gallons of water at high pressure mixed with toxic chemicals and sand to fracture the rock and bring back up oil and gas along with some of the mixture of toxic chemicals you sent down. This is a new mining practice, a new drilling practice in the last 10 years. It's taken off in states like Pennsylvania, and it's coming to New York, and it's in Ohio. And we've seen real environmental consequences in states where it's become a big industry.
All you got to do is see the movie Gasland.
Exactly.
To get an idea of what this is all about.
Exactly. So, and in Illinois, we've had oil drilling for a long time. We produce about 1% of the nation's crude oil in Illinois. But what's new is that we've seen natural gas fracking companies leasing land for natural gas fracking in Illinois in the southern part of the state. And we don't have a regulatory regime in place for this new type of high-volume horizontal fracking. And it's really scary, the prospect that this industry could take off in the state with no regulatory oversight. The first test wells for natural gas are being dug this month, we think. And if those yield natural gas, there could be a boom in the southern part of the state. And the state is not equipped to ensure that the fracking that happens isn't gonna hurt our environment or public health or taint water supplies. It's a potential disaster waiting to happen. And right now, the oil and gas drillers don't really have any substantial regulation in the state. If you want to drill an oil well in the state, you fill out a one-page form, you pay a tiny fee, you submit it to the department that regulates, and they take 2 days and they turn it around. It's a pretty much a rubber stamp process. They always approve it, and there isn't even enough data on the application form that the drillers turn in for us to know if the drilling that's going to take place is the old style of vertical wells that's been done for a long time or the new high-volume horizontal fracturing that is much, much more dangerous. And that's the thing that we're the most worried about. So that's coming. It has not been regulated properly. The Speaker of the House the Speaker of the House was concerned about fracking, and he instructed staff to prepare a bill to properly regulate this industry and get the state ready for fracking. I think the question of whether you can regulate fracking, high-volume fracking, well enough to prevent damage to the environment is kind of an open question. We haven't seen any state that has an acceptable regulatory regime. All the states that have fracking and have regulated it have many examples of big problems.
So this might be a chance for Illinois to step up and be the first.
It very well might be. And we worked with the speaker's staff to provide input on what a good regulatory bill would look like. And the drafting of that bill, the negotiations went right up to the end of the legislative session, and there just wasn't enough time to do it.
Not only do we have a chance to be first in the country to get it all right, but so often when we're talking about the environment, we're talking about reacting to a problem. Oh, my goodness, you know, there was a toxic chemical in Crestwood drinking water. How are we going to clean that up? The Asian carp at the brink of Lake Michigan, how are we going to keep them out? We can see this problem coming in advance, and if we take a breath and look at what other states have done and build on that, we've got a chance to actually prevent the mess from ever taking place in the first place.
And one of the things you're fighting, though, is the idea that this is touted as – even Obama in his State of the Union was talking about the gas reserves we have, and a lot of it is about fracking, and yet the process is not regulated, and a lot of people don't think it's safe, that it's contaminating our drinking water and causing other problems. But the blowback you're going to have on this is you're killing jobs. This is a chance for Illinois to have a lot of jobs. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think that we need to talk about the jobs in clean energy technologies. You know, we've obviously just are still in a very difficult economic time in this country, but we've created 20,000 jobs in wind and solar power in the last 5 years because of steps Springfield has taken to set clean energy goals. So we think that that is our strong suit, and that's a place where the jobs, the economic activity is across the state, whether it's in wind country or whether it's in Chicago in the suburbs where the professional services around renewables are happening. So jobs from fracking will be limited, extremely localized. Often these crews come from out of states. They bring with them sometimes a host of problems we've seen in other states. So I think we can have a broader, deeper economic jolt in a way that helps everyone if we focus on not on fossil fuels but on clean technologies.
And with that, let's go to the phone line bring in – and I've got to find my – here we go. Chuck Papraki, how you doing, Chuck? Good morning.
Good. Good morning to you, too.
This is a topic that you wanted to talk about, fracking.
Yeah. I represent an organization called SAFE, Southern Illinoisans Against Fracturing Our Environment. And we're a citizens organization fighting against the oil and gas industry's attempt to frack Illinois without any governmental regulations to protect local people or land. And when I say no regulations, I mean it. The federal government has exempted the industry from any environmental regulations, clean water, clean air. They don't need to abide by that. The state of Illinois has nothing in place to regulate them. The counties are too small, and they believe that they don't have any authority in this area. So it's like a bunch of gangsters coming into town and just taking it over without any, without any viable alternatives for the people. And in states where we've seen this happen before, you mentioned Pennsylvania and Ohio, and there's also Texas and Arkansas, this has resulted in poisoned air, poisoned water, poisoned soil, mutated animals, family members suffering from lesions and cancers, earthquakes, reduction of property values. So it's not This is not a good thing. This is something that's, get in there, make your fortune as fast as you can, and get out. And the local people and the environment be damned.
And Chuck, you're urging people to call the governor.
Yes, we are.
And tell him what exactly, because we've passed out of the session here. Is this something that is likely to come up if the legislators are called back into Springfield? Because right now
it might come up. We're asking people to call the governor and tell him to ban the issuance of permits, IGNR permits, for frack. And, that's a stopgap measure, and something has to be done more permanently. But we need something at this point to give the people some protection. And so we have a website, and it's don'tfractureillinois.org. And there's a letter there to the governor, an open letter to the governor, which asks them to ban the issuance of permits. And we're asking people to sign on to this letter and also to call up their representatives to gain support for this.
And again, that link is www.don'tfractureillinois.org.
That's right.
And yes, Max?
I just wanted to say, I think that the caller, I don't remember your name. I'm sorry.
Chuck.
Chuck, I think you're exactly right. And he, Chuck really, I think, well articulated the huge problem that we have. If fracking comes to Illinois and it's unregulated, it's a potential disaster for all the reasons that Chuck said. In addition to calling the governor, I would suggest that people tell their legislators there is a moratorium on fracking bill in the legislature as we speak that is currently alive. And people could also contact their legislators and urge them to co-sponsor the bill to put a moratorium on fracking.
I think that's a great idea. Chuck, listen, thank you very much for calling in. And again, the website is don'tfractureillinois.org. You can call the governor, tell him that fracking needs to be regulated in the state. That number in Chicago is 312-814-2121. That's the governor's number, 312-814-2121. Chuck, thank you so much for calling.
Mike, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
In relationship to job creation, Illinois is an agricultural state that imports over 95% of its food. If we would invest in local food production, just to feed our own people in the state, we would have $30 billion annual industry at 50% of the market. So aside from green energy, we should be putting our money into food production and agriculture. I just wanted to put that in there.
Well spoken. Well spoken, Chuck. Thank you so much. You have a great Sunday, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Tom?
Yeah, I think Chuck had some great suggestions there, and I think also that folks might call the lieutenant governor, too, Sheila Simon, who is from the Carbondale area. And she might be have some influence with the governor and in creating some legislation or working on fracking legislation. I wouldn't ignore her.
All right. Yeah, you know, you call as many people as you want. Call your senator, call your state rep, call the governor, call the lieutenant governor,
right.
You know. Call, I don't care. Just get on the phone. That was Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force, also in the studio. Max Muller from Environment Illinois, Jennifer Walling from the Illinois Environmental Council, and Jack Darren from Illinois Chapter of Sierra Club. Well, that's the bad. We haven't even gotten to the ugly yet, okay? So this will be interesting as we wrap up this part of the Mike Novak Show. Here we're coming into the home stretch, and we're talking the good, the bad, and the ugly of environmental stuff that came out of Springfield this spring. And here's the ugly. And let's start with on the south side with the Leucadia coal gasification plant. That bill passed. And it's now sitting on Governor Quinn's desk. It would put a plant at 115th Street and Burley Avenue. The Southeast Environmental Task Force, Tom Shepard's here from there. You guys obviously don't want that to happen. You fought so hard to get good stuff to happen on the southeast side. So you're encouraging people to call the governor, write to the governor, and say, veto this bill.
Right. We'd like phone calls. We'd like letters to the governor. And we also have a rally planned for July 10th at noon at the State of Illinois building at Randolph and where are we at? Dearborn.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to last time this bill came up, we had about 300 people march around the State of Illinois building and rally out in front and deliver several thousand signatures to the governor asking him to veto the bill. This is the second time that it's – or actually a third time that it's come up. It came up once before. It was vetoed by the governor. Then it was reworked and got the governor's signature. And then because of some complaints and threatened lawsuits by the gas delivery companies, it got reworked again. So it's come back for the third time. And I think it still has the same problems that it had before, we're asking people to, for environmental reasons or for financial purposes, to ask the governor to veto this.
Well, we've talked about the environmental aspect. The financial aspect of it, which it's going to manufacture gas at great expense to Illinois taxpayers and to customers of these gas companies. What about the environmental problems that this plant would create?
Right. Well, oh, I'm sorry. Jack touched on the CO2 issues and the global warming effects or climate change effects of CO producing more CO2 and furthering the use of coal in Illinois. Also, where this is going to be located, it's less than a half a block from people's homes, and it's on a polluted piece of property that formerly was Republic Steel and LTV Steel. And we just have so much coal currently, and this new product called Pet Coke, which is coming over from the BP refinery in Whiting, Indiana. Both of these are being stockpiled right nearby people's homes. We've had a number of people coming out and protesting about the coal being right near the homes, the dust issues, the particulate matter, the health concerns that we have. We just would like to see less of this in our region, and this brings more and more coal to our neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess that's part of my problem is that we've just got to break the coal habit. Every time we turn around, we're trying to find a new way to use coal. As you mentioned earlier, Jack, the goal here is to go to clean energy.
Right. And the goal is to let's clean up the southeast side. We were talking about our victory in stopping garbage dumping on the southeast side. Coal's got to be next. I mean, if you drive down there, giant piles of coal that the Koch brothers and others are stockpiling in Tom's neighborhood, they can't barbecue. It's all over their laundry, their houses. Coal dust you can see on your finger. We're trying to turn a corner on the southeast side and celebrate all that's good there, but we're not really going to win that battle until coal is gone.
That takes us to the final ugly thing, which is the statewide plastic bag recycling bill that passed kind of at the last second. Wasn't that sort of under the radar, Jen?
Well, I don't know that this bill was – it's a bill that's been worked on for – 2 or 3 years, but what was really the worst part of it, and I don't want to refer to it as the Plastic Bag and Film Recycle Act, which is the title. I want to refer to this as the bill that prohibits municipalities from regulating plastic bags.
Yeah.
That is what this bill does. And that portion of the bill did not pop up until the end of April. And you're right, literally, it passed the Senate at 1 in the morning on the very last day.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's, we further looked at the recycling portions of this bill as well. And this is a bill, it's supposed to put together the statewide recycling program for plastic bags and film. And it's only going to recycle an additional 0.1% of plastic bags and film. And it won't start doing that increase until 2015. So,
and in meanwhile, it prohibits communities other than Chicago, which has home rule. It prohibits other Illinois communities from employing taxes and bans on plastic bags. So basically, it's an end around. It's under the guise of being a plastic bag recycling bill doing good. It's not. It's really an industry bill that prevents real progress in the plastic bag front, right,
exactly.
Matt?
Yeah.
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, I think this bill is a scam. It is a scam on the people of Illinois. The bill is being pushed by the plastic bag manufacturers. Their strategy is they're looking out at the national political scene, and they're saying that 40 cities in California have passed bans on plastic bags. They're saying that the state of California came within one vote of passing a statewide ban on plastic bags. This bill is designed to head off that from happening in Illinois. The bill would lock Illinois into a cycle of using plastic bags for the next 5 years without any significant increase in the rates of recycling. It's way better to address plastic bags on both fronts, to increase recycling significantly, which this bill won't do, and to reduce their use. And the bill would block cities like Champaign, Highland Park, Oak Park that are really moving forward with use reduction strategies, trying to not just increase recycling but decrease the number of plastic bags in use. And this bill would block them.
And so there's going to be a press conference about this on the 3rd of July?
Yeah, Tuesday, 10 o'clock, the Thompson Center at Randolph and Lake. Please join us and help us urge the governor to veto the bill.
Including this girl who did a change.org petition. She got 152,000 people who have signed it so far. What is it about a 12-year-old girl who knows more about recycling than all of the General Assembly? I'm not sure what the answer is to that. But it's a bad bill. Call the governor. The problem is it's on his desk. And it. Do I understand it was a veto-proof majority that passed this?
Barely.
So it means that we can change hearts and minds right now. We can say, hey, look, we don't think this is good. The governor should not sign it. And then we go to our legislators and say, don't do this again.
Yeah, okay. We have just a couple of votes to flip. And
well, we're flat out of time. Listen, I want to thank you all. Jack Darren, Max Muller, Jennifer Walling, Tom Shepard. We got through most of it. I'm just amazed. Thank you all for coming into the studio. Call the governor. Call your legislator. If it's a good bill, congratulate them. If it's a bad bill, say, please veto it or fix it. Go green or go home.